This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Khoo Soo Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. In about half an hour, we'll be taking a look at Malaysia's latest political shenanigans with insights from Ibrahim Sufian, Program Director at Merdeka Centre. We've actually got a poll running on Twitter right now. Should there be a vote of no confidence against the Prime Minister when Parliament reconvenes? Your options, yes, not now, no, and not sure. Let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio. But right now, let's talk about unemployment. The Department of Statistics released the first quarter employment data on Friday, and no surprises there, the unemployment rate increased to 3.9% in March as a result of the MCO restrictions.
Yeah, so it's 3.9% in March, and bear in mind the MCO only kicked in on 18 March, so it's around half month, right? And so quickly jobs were cut, and especially, I guess, for the non-essential services. So what does that mean for April, I wonder? Would it be like 8%? So anyway, overall, unemployment for the first quarter stood at 3.5%, and simply because I think the first 2 months of the year, there was a slight increase in employment. And so, yeah, I think Chief Statistician, DOS, he said that the March 2020 figure is the highest unemployment rate in a decade.
Yeah, in March alone, the number of unemployed persons rose to over 600,000 compared to about 521,000 a year ago, and an increase of over 17%. So what does this mean for Malaysia moving forward, and how long will our winter discontent be? Helping us dissect the numbers is Lawrence Todd, Head of Research and Development at the Institute for Democracy and Current Affairs. And Economic Affairs, otherwise known as IDEAS. Lawrence, are you there on the line with us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Lawrence. Hope you're well. Now, let's just start with the kick it off with what is your initial read of the latest unemployment data? Is it within your expectations or was it worse than expected?
Well, I think we have to be prepared for it to get much worse. I think the key is what you were just discussing now, which is that these are the figures up until March. So, I mean, the MCO kicked in on the 17th. So I'm not sure at what point the department's stopped receiving more data from companies. But, you know, at best, this is going to reflect about 10 days of the MCO. So what we know is that, of course, the MCO has gone on much longer for all of April and much of May. So I think we can all expect that the figure will get that much worse. So in that sense, I think it's sort of within my expectations. But I think the other thing to highlight is that alongside this employment data, what the department did was is conducted a poll, a phone survey with a few thousand companies during April and May, which I think was quite striking. It showed that nearly 70% of companies didn't make any money during the MCO. Now, if that's true, I think we can expect the unemployment figure to rise quite dramatically when we see the figures come through for April and May, because that is a very high figure indeed.
Do you have a guess estimate what that figure might be? Just looking in the 1980s, I think it was about 7.4%. Could we reach that level?
Look, I mean, I'm not going to make a prediction because I'm sure I'll be proved wrong. But it doesn't seem to me that it's outrageous to suggest something, in that order of magnitude. I think the tricky thing is there may be some difficulties in terms of exactly how to capture the effect, because some people might not report. It depends quite how we count unemployment, because if we focus on whether people are looking for work, then they count towards the statistics. Whereas if they say they're not looking for work, which is what some people might be saying right now, then they won't count towards unemployment. They'll just be out of the labor force. So there may be some discrepancies in how the numbers are reported. But I think in terms of the scale of the impact and the scale of the problem, I would definitely see it's going to get much bigger than what is currently being suggested.
Yeah, Lawrence, I think perhaps what is more germane to the discussion is what happens after this. And with the lockdown for another 4 more weeks, at least until June the 9th, what is the potential for the economy to be starting to think about rehiring some of these workers, in your opinion?
Well, I think, of course, there's a few factors here. So the first is how the trajectory of the pandemic itself, and whether we're able to continue with this sort of looser level of restriction that we're currently in, and how many businesses feel confident operating. I think it's been striking that during the course of the MCO, more people have been detained for breaching the terms of the MCO than have been hospitalized by COVID. So that will affect, businesses' confidence about being able to take the risk of trying to understand these SOPs and get back to work. So think we have to see how all that plays out and how quickly confidence recovers. So that's slightly out of the hands of the government and businesses. And there's much to do with, you know, how the pandemic itself evolves. But I think the other key is the extent to which businesses adapt. I think for some it's going to be very difficult, but there are lots of business, I think, that have some scope to change the way they've worked. I think this has been a wake-up call for all of us, the MCO, in as far as we've learned that we can do things a bit differently. And I think that's something we're going to have to keep doing and adapt to. And how quickly we can do that and how fully we can do that, and that's going to be determined by each individual business, I think will affect the speed of the recovery and how resilient the employment structure will be going forward. So that is down to individual businesses to see how they can adapt their business models to cope with this kind of disruption, you know, continuing in the medium term and perhaps getting worse if the pandemic, you know, deteriorates again.
Now, Lawrence, the age group with the highest unemployment rate was young people aged between 18 to 30, standing at 6.9%. Now, youth unemployment was already high before the pandemic, but does COVID-19 create even more challenges for this this age segment?
Well, yes, I'm afraid it probably does. I mean, I think the problem we've had with youth unemployment, particularly in Malaysia, has been this sort of essentially a sort of oversupply of graduates and an undersupply of jobs and a mismatch between the graduates we're producing and the jobs that are available. So that is the sort of structural problem. Now, of course, what's happened with this crisis is that the availability of those jobs is going to contract further. So I do expect that problem will worsen. I think it's worth saying, though, that probably graduate jobs are in the category of the lesser affected, typically tend towards more knowledge-based work, which is more suitable for working remotely. I think what's going to change when we see the next round of employment figures or what we'll just learn moving forward is that the problem of unemployment will spread to other parts of the economy. So crucially, those, of course, who are in the most affected sectors in retail, accommodation, those areas, but also the own account workers, of which there are a few million informal workers. So I think although the youth unemployment problem is not going to improve because of the lockdown, I actually don't think it's the area that's going to be most, you know, impacted, but it will be slightly worse, I'm sure. But it's the other areas, I think, that will see the most dramatic impact as a result of the pandemic and as a result of the lockdown.
Yeah, the Department of Statistics did point out that own account workers would be are probably the most vulnerable in this crisis. Mm. Do you think the government is doing enough to help this group?
Well, I think it can be quite difficult even to reach some of these groups because it depends whether they belong to the types of institutions that the Malaysian government can reach them through. So crucially, that's SOCSO, EPF, the tax system. So when we have, you know, the more informal your employment status, the harder it is to reach you, the harder it is for you to get a loan and so on. So I think the government faces challenges in that respect in terms of reaching people and the distribution of support. I think the other challenge then, of course, has been the overall like fiscal cost of the level of support the government has tried to put in place. I mean, and I think they have certainly tried. I think the series of stimulus packages we saw in late March and early April did, you know, allocate a very significant amount of money to try and tide this problem over. But I think their judgment was that they could really only afford to even try and do that for about 6 weeks. So that was the end of March, April, beginning of May. But moving forward, they're just trying to get these people back to work because I don't think they're confident that A, what money they can spend will reach them, and B, that they have enough money at all to keep these people, tided over, as it were. So I think the government's judgment now is, look, we need to get these people back to work because we can't, even if we can afford to help them, we can't necessarily reach them with the money we do have.
All right, Lawrence, I think that's all the time we have for now. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Lawrence Todd, Head of Research and Development at the think tank Ideas, really giving us the idea that this is not a short-term problem. I mean, youth unemployment was already an issue before this. I think Julian Ng, one of our presenters, spoke to former youth minister Syed Saddiq last year about this. And it's an ongoing concern.
Yeah, it's true. And obviously, there's also some concern about the classification of unemployed, because the policy response has to be commensurate with the numbers of unemployed. And if, in fact, the classification does not actually reflect the true number of people unemployed, like it does in the US, for example, then how adequate can the policy response be?
Yeah, you know, this thing about youth unemployment, right? It really affects their future income. If you can't get a job, a good job, when you graduate, it does affect your long-term effect. And I was looking at the unemployment rate, the unemployment numbers for people who are now aged 45 to 40, around maybe 43 to 47. This is the group of people, when they graduated, it was the Asian financial crisis. And in this group, right now, at this age, 45 to 49, it's the highest unemployed or the second highest group of unemployed people.
And on that note, we're going into a few messages, and then the 7:30 a.m. news. Actually, we're going into the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.